Thank you for that song. And good morning, everyone. The music is so rich in here today. It's making me really miss everyone. And just because the feeling that I have inside, and I'm pretty sure everybody in this room right now from this glorious music, is that we just want to share that with you. And so I hope that it comes through for you in some way similar to how it's coming through for me this morning, which is deeply impactful to my life. In just this moment. And so it made me realize that we've just gone through another portal. And our world will never be the same because of that song. And is that really true? There was a lyric in there that I can't remember, but it talked about something, the beginning and the end. And that's the whole theme for this day. So I bring us into our meditation with that thought that today is the first day of the rest of your life. And the first day of the rest of my life. When I first heard that, I thought it was the craziest thing I'd ever heard, because I thought that life was just life, and that the hand that you were dealt was the hand that you lived with. And then they said that you are the author of your life and that you can recreate it. So I think it's Mary Oliver that gave us the words, "What will you do with your one wild, precious life?" And so let's bring that into a meditation. And get yourself comfortable and close your eyes if you do like to do that. And if your eyes are opened or slightly opened, gazing into eternity, not lazily, but fully active in awareness of your eternal nature. And even that we are eternal beings, and this life is temporary in some ways. Especially then, what will you do with it, with this life, this moment, and this brand new day? Ever new recreation of ourselves is every human being's inherent birthright. And do you believe that all of that, all of the secrets of the universe, are whispering to you right now through your breath? And will you listen with me for a few moments? As you breathe and attend to your breath with the deepest awareness, know that we are connected through it, and that I breathe with you, and that we breathe together. Let your breath begin to fill your physical body with divine life, every cell. And notice that you are the director, that of the trillions of cells in your physical body, every one of them you can fill right now with your attention, through the breath, with divine life. And we begin to notice something beautiful, that the breath is the divine gift. And as we move into the deep appreciation that comes with that knowing, we begin to feel more whole and healed of whatever ailments we might have. Now, here, we notice that the breath is consciousness itself. And just as you know that you are made whole and pure in God's perfect image, let your breath begin to purify your being in the same way. Until gently and entirely, we are led together into the experience of eternity right here and right now. And now, as if we've gone on a journey together, which we have, what did you find there? Bring it back with you now, as if carrying it back through the dimensionless travel that we just did, and into this dimension of physical reality, into your body, into your being, into your knowing, and into the reality of your one single precious life here and now. Feel your body again and wiggle and move whatever bones and muscles you'd like to. Gently feel that divine life thrilling up your spine, awakening all of your internal organs, expanding your heart, clearing your voice, infusing your mind, and then gently opening your eyes. To become present again to this now moment, and then look around because things seem to have changed. Don't you always love coming out of meditation and you get to look at stuff and go, it was there and it looked like that, but it's different. And so here we are. So do you just have a longing for something? And is it just an insistent yearning inside of you? And I know that's true for me. This whole thing today, finding home, just this yearning for home, but what is it? And the idea that we human beings live with this inner urging, a restless necessity to find something. And do you know what I'm talking about? It's kind of a seeking for fulfillment, but the outward, no matter how much we get, it's so nice in the moment, but then it's fleeting and fading and it seems to go away. And we say, dang, if I could just get a little more of that, I know that longing will go away. And then we get it, and it doesn't. And in fact, it gets a little bit more intense, a little bit more gnawing. And I always, always think about that, that we call it sometimes purpose, but the purpose is already within us. So where do we have to go to find it? You know, we're born into a home, right? We have a mother and a father, and we have something that we're born into as human beings. And if you ever look into a baby's eyes and you see those little spheres of eternity, and then they start to do stuff, they start to look for stuff, they start to get into things, and they start to want. And as little beings, we love to give them what they want. It's so fun. And Ram Dass calls it somebody training. We enter somebody training and we start to get molded and shaped into becoming something. and society speaks to us and we see things and we do what we think we're supposed to do, and somehow it moves us farther away from home. So as you know, Richard Rohr's been a huge inspiration in my life lately. And I'm going to bring him into this talk today, and I'm going to be sharing a lot of his stuff. But first, I want to look at this. He says in his work that we'll be looking at today that this old notion that in the beginning is the end, and in the end is the beginning. And it's such a simple idea how we come into life and then go on the great journey. And then at the end of our lives, we look back and realize that we are at a new beginning. So that death and leaving the physical body is in no way an end, but a beginning. And that life is an infinite series of beginnings and seeming endings. So will we be sad or will we be happy? The bummer about that calling, I call it a calling, the longing, something that urges us forward to become something, to do something, is that it is deeply unsettling in its nature. It's not something that you get. You go, oh, yay, I get to go on my calling and it's going to be all fun and games. It is wrought with peril and danger and hideous creatures. Teresa of Avila, she has a book called Interior Castles. And she talks about the seven mansions, seven levels of consciousness that we go through. And in the first, there's all kinds of hideous creatures that threaten to destroy us. Kind of like reminds me of Adam and Eve in the garden, you know, all the little things that happen and they get tempted by temptation. Like my friend says, I can resist anything but temptation. But we must let go if we are to answer the inner calling. And what we must let go of is the very things that we're trained to become, isn't it? Our societal programming, even our family's programming. You know, that teaching from Jesus that's very difficult, that in order to go the journey, in order to follow that inner Christ, we must literally hate mother and father and brother and sister. But hate does not mean what we think it means in our modern world. It means to lay aside and to be done with the programmings that were given by other people so that we can follow our own inner guidance. And that is the blessed, beautiful song and also the bummer, because it is so hard to let go of what we think we are to become who we actually are. It's very much leaving home to find it. It is that strange journey of becoming who we already are. There's a lot of people right now that are leaving planet Earth, leaving their physical body, and moving on. And as we always talk about, for them, we don't know the experience exactly. But for us, we know our experience. And it's hard, and it's difficult, and sometimes we cry, and sometimes we laugh, but we always celebrate. Because that was a one wild life that was beautiful. Every life. So on that journey, we have to do this crazy, weird thing that 12-step people know all about. People who are in any kind of a recovery program know all about. Carl Jung talked about it. And every spiritual path entails it. And that is that we must deal with our shadow. And when I say shadow, we've all got an idea of what that means. I've not studied Carl Jung, you know, in-depthly, so I don't know exactly his idea of what the shadow is, but I know for me what my shadow feels like. And it feels like a dark, ominous creature that's threatening to destroy me. It's the thing that tells me that I'm not going to be taken care of, that I'm not good enough, and that I will never have what I need. And it's exactly the inverse of Jesus's teachings, which tell us that we have everything that we need right now. In fact, you've got so much of what you already need right within you. Go and leave as you are now and take your journey. Because along the way, you'll discover that the universe is in fact conspiring in your favor. Isn't that weird? Conspiring. I've told you that of my conspiracy theory that the universe is always conspiring in our favor. And then Richard Rohr pointed out that conspiracy and inspiracy, inspiration of the breath expiration of the breath, conspiration of the breath, what we did in our meditation. And so it made me think about what we talked about last week, about deeply connecting with a God that we know from the inside, and that that is a confidence. We confide with God. And fidelity, the other part of that word, with fidelity, we go to this being of whatever it is, the greatest mystery known to us all, what we call God or what we call science or whatever it is, and we go to it, and from the depths of our being, we say, I don't know how to do this. Will you help me? And the answer is always, yes, I will. I'm glad that you asked. And then the miracle happens, and we find the golden little trinket that we need to pay the ferryman to take us to the next destination. What a thing it is. In fact, the other day, I was dealing with my shadow. It was kind of interesting. I've been doing a lot of hiking lately and going out into the woods and going up mountains and all that. And a friend of mine said, be very careful. He said, people get abducted all the time in the mountains, which is probably true. So he said, be very careful. Make sure people know where you're at. And I said, okay. And so on this particular day, a few days ago, I was going on a new trail, and I'd never been there before, and I purposely let no one know. You know, if you want somebody to do something, just tell them not to do it. So anyway, I go down, and I found this gorgeous river, and it's just right out on the Mountain Loop Highway there. It's called the Old Roby Trail, and I hiked down a little bit, and there's this gorgeous river, and there used to be some railroad tracks that went right along this river, and they're gone now. In fact, it made me think it probably was 100 years ago that that train was running. But anyway, it goes into a cave. And the cave is, you know, carved out of stone. And I just thought about, if the train was 100 years ago, they must have built it that long ago. And I could just see those workers, you know, chopping these big chunks of rock out so they can literally make a train tunnel. Anyway, so it's at the end of the hike, and the sign said, don't go past that area. Right on. So anyway, I looked down in that tunnel, and it was very dark. And I thought about what my friend had said. And one of the things he said was, what happens to these people who get abducted is something starts to call to them, and they go to it, and then they never come back. And so I felt that call in the tunnel. And I said, man, I gotta go. So I went into the tunnel, and it was really eerie. You know, the water was dripping and it was very moist in there, and you could hear it drop, drop. And all of a sudden, you know, your mind starts hearing footsteps and voices and everything. And I looked far enough down to see there's light at the end of the tunnel. And so I said, and you know, there was that little, well, quite a bit of darkness between me and that light. And I had to face something there, and it was the shadow. And at first I didn't recognize it. And then I said, I gotta go. So I went through that tunnel and I came out to the other side. And on the other side, there's no trail. There's a bunch of trees fallen and they don't want you hiking there. And I could have gone in there, but it didn't call to me like the going into the tunnel did. So then I turned back around, darkness. I said, I have to go back through the darkness. And now my heartbeat was a little higher and I wondered, the first time I made it, what if I don't make it this time? What if my friend was right? And as I got in the center of the darkness, I definitely heard footsteps behind me. And I thought to myself, okay. And so I turned around and I said, you are my shadow and you're not real. And it was true. It was. It was all in my mind, and I made all that stuff up. There was no one there and nothing there except darkness. The one darkness that I have been afraid of my whole life. And so in that moment, when I made the choice to confront it, it disappeared. And that's what shadow work to me is about. We take a look at who we have been and what we have been, and we just decide if that's who we want to continue to be. And if it's not, we forgive it. And we realize today's the first day of the rest of my life, and this day will be determinative for me. I will pass through a portal today, and I will live my best life. What a thing that is. So this is a book by Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R. It's called Falling Upward. And it was actually a gift to me, a tremendous gift from a friend who's helping me, you know, just on the ministerial path. And helping me to do this work and learn and grow. Anyway, every chapter's a journey. And I share this book with you because it's all about the second half of life. And there's so many of us probably listening today who are in a sort of a second half of life, where all of the things of the somebody training suddenly don't hold the same luster they did, and we're moving into something new in our lives. But what? Because surely I'm too old, I'm not gonna have what I need, and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, each chapter is a journey, and this particular chapter is called Home and Homesickness. And it talks about all these things that I've been sharing with you. But it opens with a quote from T.S. Eliot that's very interesting. And it says that old men ought to be explorers. And I include in that old people, old women, old men, old humans ought to be explorers. Here and there does not matter. We must be still and still moving. We must be still and still moving. Into another intensity, for another union, a deeper communion. This whole thing about leaving home to find it, you know, every single myth, Joseph Campbell did all that wonderful work in mythology, and in every single myth called the hero's journey, and there's a chapter in here called that, the hero, who is you, must go out to find the treasure that's always within, but it doesn't seem that way. Surely if I go far enough into a strange land, I will discover it. And yes, that's true. So, you know, another story that comes to mind, and I wanted to share this last week. Another friend of mine who was in recovery, he came to a place in his life where he wanted to end it all. He'd had enough. He was what we call in his cups. He'd been drinking plenty of alcohol for a long time, and that gets you very depressed. And so he was in his car, and I believe that he had a bottle of whiskey between his legs, which he had been definitely drinking. And he was just right in front of a cliff, and he was going to drive off that cliff. And he was going to do it, and plenty of people do. But before he did, he said, God, if there is one, I need help. And that is a prayer that is uttered by more people than I ever knew, right when their life changes. And in that moment, what he says was that he was overcome with a feeling of goodness, with the feeling that everything was going to be all right in the midst of that great suffering. Same thing that happened to me in that cave. I just turned around and faced that, and I said, this ain't even real. And that's what happened to him in a slightly different way. And so he came back into the world, and from that point on, he devoted his life to the world. And he lived a wonderful life for another 3 decades at least. And when he passed, he said, this whole thing was a gift, this whole second half of life, and it's been good, and I want to go. And he did, and he went with great joy. And that is how I feel like, for me, that's how it should be. What Yogananda said a couple weeks ago, you know, when you come in, you're crying and everybody's cheering, and when you go out, make it so that you're cheering and everybody's crying. What a thing. Okay, we've got more stuff. The whole thing of this talk and what I've been sharing with you is summed up in a paragraph that I just want to share with you. You know, a guy like Richard Rohr, he's been a priest his whole life, and he's dealt with his church, and he's fought against it, and he's found out who he is. So when I read this stuff, it's what I'm going through. And I think, how does he write it so beautifully? And he writes it so beautifully because he's dealt with it for his whole life and then given his life to serving other people in this way. So he says here, a quote by Carl Jung, that life is a luminous pause between two great mysteries, which themselves are one. Somehow the end is in the beginning, and the beginning points toward the end. We're told that even children with a sad or abusive childhood still long for home or mother of some sort in some idealized form, and still yearn to return to it somehow, maybe just to do it right this time. Remember a documentary with Henry Ford. He rebuilt his childhood home to the T when he was an old man. Everything about it, every chair, every little thing that his grandmother had knitted, exactly as it was. And as an old man, he sat in this rocking chair, and I saw a picture of him, and he looked deeply depressed. He was looking for something that he never could find. So he says, what is going on there? Agreeing with Carl Jung, I believe that the one great mystery is revealed at the beginning and forever beckons us forward towards its full realization. And do you ever feel like that? That thing that's pulling us, it's beckoning us somewhere. And even though we know we can realize it now, we still must go on the journey, young or old. To where are we going? Most of us cannot let go of this implanted promise. Some would call this homing device their soul, and some would call it the indwelling Holy Spirit. And some might just call it nostalgia or dream time. All I know is that it will not be ignored. Can you relate? It calls us both backward and forward to our foundation and to our future. It also feels like grace from within, and at the same time, from beyond. Then he says this thing that another friend of mine says. He says, wouldn't it make sense that God would plant in us a desire for what God already wants us to become? And my friend says it like this: God would not put a dream in my heart without everything that I need to realize it in this moment. And sometimes we can think about that. You know, I'm thinking right now as I give this talk to you, what the hell am I talking about? You know, quite honestly, what am I talking about? And do you ever get that when you're in the midst of sort of wrestling with something huge? You're like, what am I even doing? Maybe it's at your job or when a loved one dies or whatever it is. You know, what am I really doing? And what I'm doing is finding what that calling is with you right now, knowing full well that I am connected to you in that most real way, and that we as human beings are living something, and that we as a society are largely asleep. I didn't know if I would share this with you, but it was on the radio, so I might as well. They said that with this coronavirus, one of the main symptoms that they're seeing is people are stuck in sleeping all the time. They're sleeping for many, many, many hours. And they said, it's a weird thing. We don't understand what's going on. And for a guy like me, I look at the world symbolically in everything. And Jesus teaches me that, and so many other teachers. So if that's happening with this major thing that is worldwide, is that some kind of a metaphor that we are asleep and that it's time to wake up? And so that's what I'm doing here. I just realized in this moment, looking for that thing to find something that has real meaning, something that is worthy of my journey. And I don't walk this journey alone. I walk it with you, with everybody in this room, and with everybody on this planet. There is one race here on Earth, and that's the human race. Beyond all containers, there's the presence of that beautiful life. And we've been given this great joy. So I say, let's leave what we've known. Let's leave the consciousness which perpetuates fear and misbelonging and misunderstanding, and instead lay hold of that power that we have felt this morning and share it with each other, that simply. So I guess we got the call together. Thank you. Amen.